I go, 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 while listening to Tooncast.
Coming up today on Tooncast, Kevin and I, TFG1 Mike, have the awesome, awesome opportunity to interview Larry Kenny, the voice of Lion-O, Bluegrass, Sonny the Kogo Bird, Count Chocula, and a whole other various things that he has done. This is going to be so awesome to talk to him.
This is going to be an incredible experience.
Oh, yes. Very, very much so. So, without further ado, here is Lion-O, Lord of the Thundercats, talking with us. Hello, everyone. This is Michael TFG1 Blanchard, and I am joined with my usual Tooncast co-host, Kevin Thompson. Hello.
How's it going, man?
And today, the two of us have a super awesome privilege to interview Larry Kenny. Yes, that's right. Lion-O, Lord of the Thundercats, is on the line with us. Hello, Larry.
Oh, shucks. I'm a secret what now? A secret special thing?
Awesome. A special guest.
Oh, good. Yeah, I like super awesome. I'm going to add that to my name, super awesome Larry Kenny. How you doing, guys?
Doing pretty good.
All right.
First question for you is, where did you grow up?
No place yet.
Yeah.
And I don't intend to either. 15 forever, that's my motto. Actually, I grew up not far from you guys, at least where you guys are now. I grew up right in the middle of Illinois in a town called Pekin, P-E-K-I-N, which is 12 miles from Peoria, which is where I started my radio career in Peoria.
Oh, cool.
Long time ago. I was born there in 1947.
Yeah. What got your voice acting career started?
The start of my radio career was kind of the start of my voice acting career because, well, I had always been class clown in school, you know, always doing voices that I had copied from watching people on TV like Jonathan Winters and listening to cartoons, you know, with Mel Blanc and things like that. So I was, even as a little kid, my mom tells me I was always doing character voices and cartoon voices, and then when I started in radio as a disc jockey, I kind of carried that into my programs, you know, as a disc jockey. I'd introduce the records of the day, and then I'd have, you know, characters who appeared in my show and things like that. And that actually led into voice acting, into doing commercials, which I had done for several years before I did any cartoon series. I've been doing Cocoa Puffs and Count Chocula for over 30 years now, both of those. So the radio for me was kind of the lead into voice acting.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned the Cocoa Bird and some of the other ones. Can you reveal any of the behind the scenes moments from either the commercial recordings or even some behind the scenes moments from some of your cartoon work?
Well, from the cartoon work, a lot of the quote, what used to be what we thought would be behind-the-scenes moments turned out to be available for everybody in the world online. As you guys, I'm sure, know, there are outtakes.
Yeah.
From Thundercats and Silverhawks and I think almost every cartoon series we did, Karate Cat. Oh, my gosh. We did a lot of them. So too many things that happened on the cartoon shows that are behind the scenes anymore.
Yep.
Anybody, I'm sure you guys will tell everybody if they don't know about the outtakes, just Google them, or you can probably tell them
right.
The websites where they can find them.
How
a lot of people write me and ask if they're really us, and yes, indeed they are. There's really not too much I can tell you. I wish I had some funny stories about recording.
How do you feel about those outtakes being available?
Well, at first, when I first found out about it, I was a little upset. I thought, oh, my gosh, what if some little kids hear those? You know, some of them are pretty raw. But obviously, you know, in this day and age, kids hear that kind of stuff anyway, and it's nothing really terrible. But it was just kind of a shock to us because when we made those things, we recorded Thundercats, for example, back in the mid-80s. And then back then, there was no internet, as far as most of us knew. And what usually happened to outtakes from recording sessions was that the engineers would keep a copy of them and put them on what we called their Christmas reel. Whenever they had a Christmas party with their friends, they'd say, hey, guys, I got some great outtakes from, you know, from guys in the Thundercats. And so, That's the only people that ever hear it, you know. So at first I thought, oh, gee, this could be bad news for, you know, Mr. Ben publicity, but it never was. I mean, there's so much of that stuff around. So, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, I've actually looked up some of those on YouTube, and
yeah.
It's funny how some people take the outtakes audio and try to sync it to the Thundercats cartoon.
There are a couple of very good ones that I've seen. Yeah, where they sync up the lips, if you will, perfectly to what the outtakes are saying.
Yeah, yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, somebody's got too much time on their hands, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree on that point. You've been doing radio for a very long time. Do you feel that you have been typecast as a radio announcer / DJ, or do you feel as you've been typecast just for Lion-O?
No, I've not been typecast at all. I'm very lucky because I do such a wide variety of things. I mean, first of all, Lion-O was pretty much my own voice, as you can tell. It wasn't something that I changed my voice a lot for. I made it a little more dramatic, you know. Instead of saying, Pedro Chitara, I'm going to go kill Mumra. You know, it was more, Pedro Chitara, my leg, I can't move, which happened every episode. But, I wasn't typecast as Lion-O, because that's pretty much my own voice. And I think all the advertising agencies, I mean, I've been doing this for 45 years now, and they all know that I can do a wide variety of things. And I've been given the opportunity to do a wide variety of things. There's still lots of things that are on TV and radio that you probably hear all the time that you don't know it's me, which is fine, you know. The Skittles commercials, for example, you know, the guy who says, "Feel the rainbow, taste the rainbow," that's me.
Oh,
wow. That's
awesome.
Same voice I used on a show for VH1 called Best Week Ever. It's okay. The best week ever! Didn't know that was me either, did you?
I did know that one. I didn't know the Skittles, though.
Yeah.
Oh, the Skittles.
So, like I said, my typecast, I still... Get a chance to do a wide variety of things.
Looking back at, you know, specifically maybe Thundercats and Silverhawks, is there like a favorite memory you have from those shows, or is there something that you, when you look back, you miss the most over, you know, some other stuff that happened?
The thing I miss most is just being with all those people. We got to Earl Hammond and Earl Hyman and Bob McFadden, Peter Newman, Lynn Lipton, Jerry Ann Raphael. Hope I haven't left anybody out. That was a cast of Thundercats. We also did, most of us did Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks, Scooby Cat, Street Frogs, and then we did a whole bunch of Christmas, Rankin-Bass Christmas shows. So I can't really point to one, just like one moment that was so funny or something. Every time we worked, the people were so funny and we had such a great time. And they were such nice, good people. But I miss being around those people all the time. That's really all I can say. I just cherish that time together. And we worked together for, you know, it took us 3 years to record Thundercats.
Yeah.
And then we worked a couple of years on Silverhawks. And so we were together a lot.
Was there anything about, looking back at your cartoon work, was there anything or any show that you did that you did not enjoy or you just didn't like, or was there anything that was hard for you in any of the cartoon shows you did?
No, I've never thought of that. That's a very good question, and I've never thought of it. Maybe it's because, now that I think about it, there never was anything I didn't really like. I mean, there were some that were better than others, obviously, and you kind of knew once you began. I think when we started, I don't want to denigrate anyone's show, but when we started working on Tiger Sharks, which was after Thundercats and Silverhawks. After about 10 shows, we kind of knew, at lunch we might say something. I don't think this is going too far. You tell the ideas were kind of getting thin, and, let's face it, it was basically the same writers and animators and cast that had done 130 episodes of Thundercats and I think 130 of Silverhawks. So, it was, it was pretty tough to keep up the quality. That's why most shows, even, primetime sitcoms, they end at some point because you run out of ideas, you know. But I really can't say that there are any that I knew right away I didn't like working on. Usually by the time you get tired of it, it ended, you know.
Yeah, when we were coming up with these questions for you to a couple weeks ago, I actually thought of something that didn't occur to me before. Peter Newman, you were Lion-O and he was Tiger on Thundercats, and then on Silverhawks,
right,
the roles were reversed. He was Quicksilver, you were Bluegrass. Were you guys ever at odds over odds with each other as far as who was getting the quote unquote leader role.
No. Not that I recall. Never really thought about that. I mean, Peter might have. I never did. I'll have to talk to him. I see him all the time. You know, we have the same agent in New York, and I see him at auditions and recording sessions, you know, several times a year. I think probably he would agree with you, though, that no matter who was boss in Tiger Sharks or Silverhawks, that Lion-O is probably, you know, the lord of everything. That's the way I feel about it.
Exactly. Actually, a little side note to that question I just asked you. I actually didn't know. We've already covered Thundercats and Silverhawks here on Tooncast as far as our discussion and remembering growing up on the shows. And until I watched a couple of episodes of Silverhawks on YouTube, I had no idea that bluegrass is basically a country version of Lion-O.
It pretty much is. Same voice, that's right. He's got a little twang and plays that guitar and hangs out with that annoying kid all the time. None of the voices that I did, Tiger Sharks, I was Dolph, and that was pretty much my own voice. I hadn't thought about it. You guys ask interesting questions. I come to think of it, the only time I really did, character voice, where I really changed my voice a lot on those shows, was when I did the Mutant, you know, or a villain. Like, I was Jackalman in Thundercats, and he was something like, "We must get the Thundercats, yes!" Those are fun to do because you got to be like Snidely Whiplash, you know.
Right.
Everybody always likes playing villains more than heroes because you get to have more fun.
Yep.
When you were doing Thundercats or Silverhawks or, you know, even earlier on in your career, were there any voice actors out there that you were in awe of or you admired the most or maybe you got to work with and you were kind of speechless around? Or who did you look up to?
Oh, sure. I'll never forget when I worked with James Earl Jones about 8 or 10 years ago on some Verizon commercials, radio commercials, because James Earl Jones, of course, is one of the great, not only great actors on screen, but one of the great voice actors. I mean, people your generation probably know him most as the voice of Darth Vader, you know.
Darth Vader and Mufasa from The Lion King.
Yes, exactly. Well, so many things. So great pleasure of me to work with James Earl Jones and to meet him. Just the nicest guy in the world. Who else? I guess so many people. I got to meet, I haven't worked with yet, but we're planning on it, with Luke Skywalker. Tell me his real name. I forgot.
Mark Hamill.
Yeah, of course, Mark Hamill. I'm sorry. I met him. Actually, he came up to my table at a Comic-Con in Florida. And he stood in line behind a couple of young people who were getting autographs. And I looked at, you know, I signed somebody's autograph. I looked up and I said, "Hi, my name is..." Oh, my God. He said, "Larry, I'm a big fan." I said, "How long have you been standing in line?" He said, "No, I just got here." So we had lunch later, and he's a big animation fan, as you guys probably know. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He does animation himself. You know, he has animation studio. So to meet people like that is really a kick, you know. That's one of the nice things about the business is every once in a while you guys ask to get to meet people that you grew up with. You know, I get to meet people that I grew up listening to. I never met Mel Blanc or people like that, but I've met a lot of people in the business that I admired. And it's a kick. It's always a kick to meet somebody who is an idol of yours.
Oh, yeah, that's very much so.
Kind of a touchy question here, maybe you might not want to answer, but on the flip side of that, has there ever been someone you've worked with, you know, in the voice acting business that you just, for some reason or another, just didn't get along with or rubbed you the wrong way?
Never. Not one. Never.
Larry.
I'll give you his initials. There's always people you meet that aren't as great as you thought they were going to be, but for one thing, I'd never mention them, and I can't even really remember who they were. I tend to forget things like that. Seriously, I really do. I'm kind of a positive person, and if I meet somebody, unless they really did something horrible to me, and that's never happened. But I don't dwell on who I didn't like. You know, I just remember the good things.
Good.
Very cool. How were you informed that the show was coming to an end as far as Thundercats, and did you think that the show had done everything it could have, or did you wish it went on even
more? Yeah. Well, you guys really have some good questions, I'm sure. They're not the typical questions. I like that. As I look back, first of all, it's pretty common knowledge in the business that for any kind of a syndicated show on TV, and especially an animated show, the minimum number of shows you need to have to sell it in syndication is 130. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how that was arrived at. I think that comes to like 3 full seasons or something like that. And it's very not worth their while to try to syndicate something with less than that number. So as we got nearer to 130 episodes, once we got around 130, I think we all knew that something was going to happen. Either we were going to run out of ideas and we were just going to end at 130, or they were going to change the series drastically, maybe even a new, the new generation or something like that.
Right.
But then as we got closer, I'm sure they told us, I don't recall exactly when, but I'm sure they told us we've decided to end at 130. So when it happened, we weren't just taken into a room and said, you're fired. We all knew it was coming, and we were ready for it, too. One thing you don't want to do when you're involved with a show that had already become a classic, really, and we knew it was going to live a long time, you don't want to kill it. We don't want to ruin it, by stretching it out too long and watering it down and having people say, it's gotten silly. Leave them wanting more is the idea. Right. Kind of a long answer to your question, but...
No, that's good.
I couldn't do that.
over the course of either show or any of the shows you've done, are you someone who watches the cartoon back to hear what you sound like and see it all kind of in one piece, or do you try to stay away from watching?
Do you mean as you're recording it so you remember what your character sounded like?
No. Or just like in, like if you record something and like then later on, weeks later, do you watch it back to see how it turned out or?
Not really. At least I never have. In fact, I hadn't seen any of Thundercats for 20 years or so until this nostalgia wave came up recently. Simply because I knew what they said. I did them.
Yeah.
I think most people in the business would tell you the same thing. At least most actors I've seen, when asked that question, do you watch your old movies? Do you watch your... No, I don't. It's just something... I don't know. I mean, maybe... If you haven't seen something in 20 years, you might watch a part of it, but you were there, you did it, and it doesn't have the same magic to you that it does to the fans because you saw the behind the scenes and stuff. And so, no, I don't watch old stuff.
Okay. Out of all the characters you've voiced, especially focusing on Thundercats and Silverhawks, since you did multiple voices on both shows, I know you had mentioned that you liked some of the villain characters more. Is there a favorite character that you had on all those shows?
I think Jack-O-Man was my favorite, yeah, because I like to I could tell. Well, first of all, when we were deciding what kind of a voice to do for him, the very name Jack-O-Man, a jackal is like an evil. It's a fox-like, fox-wolf type mixed character, And the first thing that came to my mind was, if you guys are familiar with the name Snidely Whiplash, mm-hmm. back in the 40s and 50s, he was the character with the top hat and the long mustache, and the black cape. He's the one who would tie the girl to the railroad tracks,
And he talks like this,
So that was the first thought. Let's bring Snidely back. But I gave him a kind of an animal growl,
We must get the fun to catch you,
So, and that was always fun. It's always fun to play villains, and it was fun to watch Earl Hammond do Mumm-Ra. we all wish we were Mumm-Ra for a while, until we saw how much work it was. I mean,
I
he had to really bellow that out, some spirits of evil. And he would drool like Mumm-Ra actually does on screen. The slobber would come out of Earl's mouth. Nobody would stand closer to 10 feet from him when he was doing Mumm-Ra.
How easy or hard was it for you to keep track of which voice went with which character? Every voice actor has a method. What was yours?
Yeah, you're right. Everybody has it differently. I always preferred to if, for example, two of my characters were having a dialogue with each other, I preferred to do the whole scene and go back and forth without breaking and just, you know, if Lyoto was talking to Jack O'Man, I don't know if, I don't recall if it ever happened, it probably did, but I preferred to just do it like, Jack O'Man, you'll not stop us.
Oh, yes, we will, Lyoto.
I'm telling you, you can't. Yes, we can. No, I always preferred to do it back and forth. Some of the actors preferred to do all of one character's lines first, and then all of the other character's lines and have them edited. I just had more fun, I think, with the challenge of doing it back and forth.
Do you have a favorite memory or favorite part about each show that you've done over the years as far as the cartoons?
Aside from this interview? Gosh. No, like I said before, I don't think I have one favorite moment, one favorite. It sounds like a lame answer, but it's true. Probably the favorite thing of my career for me is working with that crew of people that I worked with, not just the actors that I mentioned before, Peter and Lynn and the two Earls and Bob and Jerry Ann, but Lee Doniker, who was the director, and the engineers, Larry Crenshaw and all those guys. It was just for 5 years, you know, working with the same group of fun, wonderful people. That's my favorite memory.
Yeah.
This is kind of a little side note because Mike and I have a little battle going. But
yeah.
when it comes to Silverhawks and Thundercats, in your personal opinion, is there one that you think was a better overall cartoon or which one you had more fun with?
Well, Thundercats, I have to say Thundercats was the better cartoon, and I don't know if we had more fun. I think we had more fun with it.
Yes.
And I think that's obvious because it has become the classic. I mean, Silverhawks still does pretty well. I think they're even putting it out on DVD or already have. But Thundercats is the, as you guys know, for your generation, that's, you know, of those three, or of those two, that's the one that you guys, I would think, say is the top one. So, yeah, Thundercats. I'll go on a limb and say that. It's Thundercats. Especially because of Lionel. He's the best.
Let's see. I know you've mentioned a couple of them, but out of all the voice actors you've worked with, how many do you keep in contact with still, or how many do you see on a regular basis?
Well, unfortunately, we've lost
Bob McFadden.
We've lost Bob McFadden and Earl Hammond, so I miss those guys. I see Peter Newman quite often, probably at least once or twice a month, mm-hmm. And he's in the business in New York. Lynn Lipton I see less frequently since we don't have the same agent, but I see her two or three times a year. I see Jerry Ann Raphael that number of times. So all those guys I see quite a bit.
When I have all, Thundercats has four DVD sets for both of the seasons.
Yeah.
I actually, both of us, when we were doing research for our topic show, we watched almost every single episode. And as I was watching them, and I was watching Panther, and I'm like, wait. And I listened, I'm like, oh, wow, that's Grandpa Cosby. And I never knew that before. And I'm like, well, this is Grandpa Cosby on a cartoon. I never knew that. That was so cool.
That's Earl Hyman. He played Bill Cosby's father on The Cosby Show, and he played Panther.
Yes, he did. Can you tell us about your experience as the announcer from Grand Theft Auto, Count Chocula, and Sonny the Cocoa Bird?
Well, Grand Theft Auto won't take me very long, because I'm only on there for about 3 minutes, I think. I think I'm a talk show host on the radio or something, or a disc jockey on the radio. I never heard of it, actually. And I remember they called me, and I went into a studio for about 10 minutes in New York and just read the copy, and I don't even remember what I said. So my son talked me into doing it. I wasn't going to do it. My son said, "Oh, Dad, you got to do it," because he was about 18 at the time. In fact, I got him on this. He's on there too.
Cool.
He's one of the callers, I think.
Yeah, according to our information that you have, our information that we have on you, you were the voice, the announcer for the Beat 102.7.
That must be it. Yeah. But the ones you asked me were what? Cocoa Puffs and Count Chocula.
Yeah. Cocoa Puffs and Count Chocula.
Well, I've been doing those for over 30 years, you know. So.
See, I never knew. I honestly never knew when I was a kid. I never knew that that was you doing Sonny and Count Chocula. I didn't know that until I started doing research on you for this.
Yeah, I took over from. I forget which guys were doing it. But I've been doing both of them since about 78 and 79, I think. So that's 30 and 31 years. Yeah.
Actually, it's
been a good run. Put my kids through college.
Oh yeah. Actually, it's very funny. I went grocery shopping last week, and throughout the entire cereal aisle, I could not find Count Chocula anywhere in the store I went to, but I found Cocoa Puffs, and I have two boxes sitting in the kitchen.
Oh, fantastic. Don't eat that crap, it'll kill you.
No, they're not open yet.
keep it that way.
What was it like reprising Lion-O in the Family Guy episode?
That was cool. The only bad part about it was one of the main reasons I did it, agreed to do it, was that I was hoping I'd get to work with Seth MacFarlane, who I consider a genius. And the other people on that show, it's a genius show. However, I have to admit to you that when I first got the call from my agent, I said, well, I've heard of the show. I've seen it on the channel guide. You know, let me check it out. Well, I watched 3 minutes of it. I said, there's no way I'm going to do Lion-O on that show. Because I said, it's, you know, I happen to like the show. I think it's very funny. But I have this proprietary thing about Lion-O and Thundercats that I don't think the fans of Thundercats want to hear, you know, Thundercats on that show saying those kinds of things. Maybe I'm being approved. But long story short, my son, Tanner, talked me into doing it. He said, Dad, you've got to do it. It's the big show. He said, big stars try to get on that show. It's like The Simpsons has been, you know. I heard Al Pacino called him and said, can I be on The Family Guy? I said, I don't care. I don't want to do it. Well, long story short, I always say that, don't I? And I never make it short. I said, well, all right, send me the script. Then we'll see. I take one look at the script and I say, no way am I going to do this. Finally, my son talked me into doing it. He said, Dad, you got to remember, first of all, this show is not for little kids. I watch, you know, it's not intended for little 8-year-old kids. It's for adults. I said, well, yeah, you're right. So I did it. And then I just kind of held my breath to see how much email I got, a hate email from Thundercats fans saying, how could you let Lion-O do something like that? And all I got was accolades. You know, it's funny. Glad you did it. So bit the bullet on that one.
Excellent. I've read some stories, I don't know if they're true or not, about an experience you had back in the 80s with some kids that you ran into at a Toys R Us action figure aisle.
Yeah.
Do you mind retelling that story?
Oh, it was very funny. It was probably about 87 or 88. Thundercats went on the air in 85, although we started recording in 83.
Right.
So maybe it was about late 85 or 86. When I knew that Thundercats, the cartoon show, apparently had become a huge hit because I took my daughter, Carrie, who was only, she was only 14 or 15 then. We went to Toys R Us for some reason, and we get down to this. There's three aisles, two-sided aisles, of nothing but Thundercats.
Wow.
Collectibles and material, memorabilia. Well, it wasn't memorabilia, action toys and things.
Right.
And that's when I realized, holy cow, I better make sure I got a piece of this thing. So anyway, we're walking down one aisle, and there's two boys, maybe, I don't know, 10 and 12, 8 and 12, I don't know how old they were. As we walked by, I could hear one of them say something. One kid said, I want to get Pantro. He's my favorite. Another kid said, oh, I like Mumra. He's the bad guy. So just for fun, I looked at him. I said, why don't you get Lion-O? You know, he's the lord of the Thundercats. Hello! And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I walked away. And as we were walking away, I heard one of the kids say to the other one, he doesn't even sound like Lion-O. I looked at my daughter. I said, if that little fart only knew, he'd crap his pants. So I thought it was funny. He doesn't even sound like Lion-O.
That's awesome. I used to have a videotape at home that I watched almost until it didn't work anymore, called Super Duper Baseball Bloopers.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember working on that at all? Because I remember me and my friends watching that show watching that videotape until it
really
didn't work anymore.
I know that I was on it because I have a list here in case people ask me questions like this. So I go, I was on that. You got to remember, it's been 45 years of recording things, and sometimes forget what you're on. Seriously, though, I do keep a list because sometimes somebody will call and say, weren't you on? And I'll say, I think so, and I wasn't. And then I get, you know, people saying, oh, he's saying he was on shows he was never on. What a phony, you know?
Oh,
the bloopers I was on, but I don't remember recording it. Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I went to ESPN, I believe, to do that, up in Bristol, Connecticut.
Okay.
Where their headquarters are. And they were very nice to me, and I remember going up there and had very nice studios, and I ended up doing quite a bit of work there, I think, up in Bristol, which is about an hour from my house.
Cool.
That was actually, I think, I did a whole series over the years of things like that, Super Duper Baseball bloopers, and things about different kinds of sports, and a lot of them I think were VHS tapes before DVDs and CDs. You know, that you got if you subscribed to like Sports Illustrated or something.
I think that's how I got it, and I just got to give you some praise there because I remember that we watched it so much because of you and whoever else was doing the voices with you.
Oh,
that was
great.
Awesome.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice. You know, I have to watch that again. You asked me earlier if I ever watch old things. I rarely do, but something like that. I have to watch it again. As I recall, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was classic.
Okay.
Why did you stop doing voiceover work for cartoons for the most part and start focusing on other aspects of your career?
I didn't. Once we finished Thundercats, Silverhawks, Tiger Sharks, and all that, the animation business kind of dried up in New York. As a matter of fact, up until Thundercats, almost no animation series had ever been done in New York. They were always in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And to this day, I don't know why Rankin Bass decided to come to New York for Thundercats and the other two. Thank God they did. But now there's still some done here. Nickelodeon, of course, and Cartoon Network do some of their own original things here. But generally, there's not too much... So to answer your question, I didn't retire from it. I just haven't been asked to do it anymore. Although I did recently go to Florida and record 15 episodes or so of a show that may be coming on. We don't know yet. Called Redneck Space Track. And I have in the works now two other animated projects that they want me to work on that my agent is looking into. So
awesome. Good luck with that.
I didn't retire from it. I just hadn't gotten connected with any of them since then.
Just as a side note, because I think we need to bring it up, we kind of talked about your radio career. Can you talk to us about being on the Imus in the Morning Show and your career?
Oh, yeah, sure. That I have retired from just in the last couple of years. I was I was on Imus' show for 35 years from 73 to 2008. For the first 25 years or so. We were on radio only, and I'd go in every day at about noon. I'd only be there for about half an hour. I'd record my 3 minute comedy routine as Nixon or Kissinger or Ted Kennedy or whatever. And then once you got on TV on MSNBC, I had to go there live. You know, I had to be there 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning, get my makeup and costume on, and then be there till 9, and then go into Manhattan and do the voiceover stuff. So a couple of years ago, after his 8-month hiatus, he called me and said he was going to start it up again. I said, you know what? I think I've rediscovered the joy of sleeping past 4 a.m. And I said, you know, I just turned 60 years old. I got two grandsons. And I tell you what, I'm not going to do that show anymore. And 35 years is a good run, but I'm just tired of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and driving in from Connecticut to New Jersey to do that show. But I enjoyed it, and... It's a good memory from there.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Kevin. I'm not trying to interrupt you.
It's okay. I got to cut both of you off in a couple minutes here anyway.
We have like one question left for you. go ahead, Kevin.
I was just wondering two things. First, could you speak a little bit about your three children and what they're accomplished so far in the past and what they're
sure. They're all the joy of my life. My oldest daughter, Carrie, who many of you know, I think, she's an actress and a writer and executive producer of television and films. Most recently, she's been on show called Reno 911, which is on Comedy Central. She and Danny DeVito are the co-executive producers of it. Yeah, and she plays Deputy Trudy Weigel, the crazy one. And they also did a movie, Reno 911 Miami, a few years ago, which did very well.
Right.
And before that, she was on Viva Variety. She was on The Ellen Show on CBS. Many years ago, she was on The State on MTV, right at college, which has just come out on DVD and getting a lot of attention now. So she's doing very well in Hollywood. She lives in Malibu, California. Her husband, Steve, is a cinematographer. He just won an Emmy last year for, he's in charge of filming Two and a Half Men on CBS.
Oh,
Charlie Sheen and John Cusack. And my daughter, Ashley, is 25. She has a 9-month-old grandson. She lives near us here in Connecticut. She's an accomplished rider, rides horses and trains horses. And my son Tanner is 21, and he is finishing up college at New York University as we speak, I hope.
Excellent.
That's the family. And then my lovely wife, Carol, whom I referred to as Mrs. Kenny DeJure, just to keep her on her toes.
Awesome. I think the last question I have for you, have you been contacted at all recently about doing either a Thundercats or a Silverhawks film?
The Thundercats movie, which is supposed to come out next spring, my agent is in discussions with Warner Brothers about. But that's all I can say. In fact, that's all I know. I don't know how it's looking, whether we're going to do it or not. But I know that my agent is talking with Warner Brothers about my reprising the role of Lionel in that movie.
I'll definitely keep our fingers crossed for that.
Oh, good. Thank you. Me too. I could use the bread. One more year of college. guys, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
We would like to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us in this special Tooncast interview. We'd like to ask you to hang on the line for one second.
Sure, I'm going to do those things for you, all right?
Right, the promos. So this has been a Tooncast special interview with Larry Kenny, the voice of Lionel, Lord of the Thundercats.
And
oh, my God. That was so awesome.
That was a pretty fun experience.
Oh, my God. That is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. For most of you that are probably going to listen to this, we just interviewed Larry Kenny, who most people know as Lion-O, Lord of the Thundercats, Bluegrass from Silverhawk, Sonny the Cocoa Bird, which, again, I did not know that was him, and it just shocks me that that's him.
Yeah.
It is just so, so shocking. But that was just an awesome, awesome experience. Big thanks has to go out to my buddy of chickenpoppod.com, Chris Stapleton. He was the one to give me Mr. Kenny's email address. I believe they had talked to him over there on Chicken Pop Pod. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that came about, but wow.
Yeah, I knew he was a personable guy and, you know, a friendly guy, but holy cow, he's just what a stand-up guy, you know, to do this and to work with us over the last couple weeks to try to make sure this happened, and, you know, very considerate, very nice. I couldn't say a bad thing about him if I wanted to.
No,
which I don't.
And actually, I have to throw Kevin under the bus here because he almost missed the interview because he wasn't home at the time, or he was off doing something. I don't know where the hell you were.
For the record, though, as soon as you texted me that and reminded me, I dropped everything I was doing and made it happen.
Let's hope you didn't drop anything important. That
well, nothing that broke.
Yeah. Thank God for that. But oh my God, that was a once in a lifetime thing. The other interview that I've done is, as everybody knows, I had interviewed Stan Bush, who is the musical mastermind behind Transformers the movie, 1986 version. And I've actually interviewed Stan twice, and the first time I was really, really professional. The second time I kind of geeked out a little bit. I was trying not to geek out on Mr. Kenny, but wow, that was just so, so awesome.
And he did hearing him, say good things about the questions we asked was like...
Oh, yeah. we had 2 weeks even before this, you know, even before the original schedule conflict, we had plenty of time before then to come up with questions, and you and I had just gone back and forth, pretty much whatever we wanted to know from him. Even though some of the questions were kind of the same, and he kind of answered them kind of not really out of order, and I'm not trying to say it in a bad way, I'm just saying that it flowed very well. is just so, so awesome. And, you know, I was trying to come up with really, not really difficult questions, but, you know, there are only so many things that, these famous people can answer.
Right.
Answers. I mean, you know, there's so many there's only so many questions that you can ask them about their career because they've only done certain things. Again, like I said with the Sonny the Cocoa Bear thing, that was a huge shock to me to have that there, and it was just really, really awesome.
It just doesn't get any cooler than being able to interview one of your childhood heroes as like a Lionel or a Bluegrass or whoever you want it. You know, that's just so cool.
Yes, very, very much so.
And a fellow Illinoisan, so.
Yes.
Go Illinois.
Yes. In Chicago, Illinois, it is illegal to go fishing in your pajamas.
What does that have to do with anything?
I have this app on my iPhone called Weird Laws, and it's on there.
Oh, excellent.
Anyways, so yeah, this has been the Tooncast special interview. Hope everybody really enjoys this interview, and we'll see you next time on Tooncast.
Adios.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.